right, welcome to the Free Stretch, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week 17 edition of the show, and I can't believe I'm saying that, but week 17, come hell or high water, win, lose, or draw, no matter what else is going on, we know that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to take the field for the final time in 2018 on Sunday at home against the Atlanta Falcons. And they're going to take the field for the final time, if you look at even preseason being in August, over 7 months away. And that's tough to hear, okay? And we're going to deal with it on today's show, because no matter what, every year, and this is not a happy time in Buck Kingdom right now, given everything going on, although I think we'll have some news over the coming weeks that, if nothing else, resets our hopes and gives us things to look forward to. And the same song and dance we've done, well, 4 or 5 times now over the past decade. But either way, it's not like there isn't going to be anything going on, but there's still a certain solemn tinge to it whenever you know it's the last game for your team. We'll talk about the game a little bit today, not as far as the matchup about the Bucs and Falcons, because who cares, but you know, there's been quite a Twitter war going on over the past week or so about people rooting for the Bucs to lose for the sake of a draft pick, and other people saying, no, man, I'm a real fan. I just want them to win. I don't care. And then those people bickering back and forth. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about the Cowboys game. Of course, there's been news breaking right and left the past couple days. None of it has really been surprising news. For one, you've got the story that, again, quote-unquote, came out today. I'm recording this on Thursday midday, but the story came out that DeSean Jackson had a little bit of a spat with Dirk Koetter. We already knew he had some dissatisfaction with Jameis Winston and his role in the offense and all that. So it looks like he won't be back. Again, that was something we knew even before the season started, looking at administrative things, contractual things, salary cap things, all that. But now it seems like it's more official. Of course, he won't be back. Again, call that news if you want to. Of course, Jason LaCanfora had a report today about the Bucs being one of the teams moving on. We'll talk about all these things today here on the show, brought to you again by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, and they are proud to announce a few things going on over there right now. So, first of all, nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, okay? That includes unlimited years, unlimited miles. You get a 10-year roadside assistance program, and you get 1-year complimentary service. You bring it in for an oil change, boom, they'll do it. You drive back out. You don't have to worry about any of these things for the first little while if you buy from Bill Curry Ford. Now, if you want to go shop online without having to drive over there, do that. Go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. Curry is spelled C-U-R-R-I-E. And it's just BillCurryFord.com. You can see all of the stuff, the transparent pricing on the website there, which, again, if you want to know before you even go what they've got, you can check out all the inventory and you can sort it. They've got drop-down menus. That's my favorite part, because I was doing that the other day, looking at, you know, I'm thinking about maybe getting something new here. And you can say, okay, I want to sort by certified pre-owned, I want to sort by used, I want to sort by new. Punch in whatever you want, Explorer, Expedition, anything Ford, even other ones. I mean, any of it, just check it out. You can search all of these things. It'll tell you exactly how many cars they have on the lot. Then you go down there in person, see Sean Sullivan, the new GM there, and you get the Joe Bucks Fan discount by saying Joe Bucks Fan, say Bobby Fenton, say the Free Stretch, whatever it is referencing this website or this show, discount on top of the already transparent pricing. And if you're going in person, a mile north or so of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, start shopping there today or at BillCurryFord.com. So thanks to them, as always, for sponsoring this show in what has been a tumultuous season in Buckland. Now, first thing I want to talk about before we get any further, and doing my show later in the week, you know, I never try and dwell too much on the prior game because people have already moved on. It's not like a Monday morning type thing, but the Cowboys game, which kind of had the same type of dynamic, I suppose, as the Falcons game coming up this weekend, in that we knew the Bucs were eliminated. We knew it was probably better off for draft position if they didn't win, and on and on and on. But you know what? I couldn't help. And part of it is a Cowboys thing, because they're quote-unquote America's team. And part of it was seeing that we had Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, the number one broadcast team in there, knowing that a lot more people were watching than maybe some routine Bucks-Panthers game on a Sunday at 1 where like 10% of the country's getting it. Maybe all these things kicked in, But my inner Tampa pride and my inner Buccaneer pride started coming out, and I really was getting into that game on Sunday. Again, knowing nothing was on the line, it was fine, but I wanted to beat the Cowboys. And maybe part of it was Aikman, who I like. I have nothing against Troy Aikman. But, you know, Aikman, first of all, he's an ex-Cowboy, and it was almost like the Bucs were just generic opponent, and it was all about the Cowboys, and this is their day to clinch the NFC East, and this is their coronation, and it's all about them. And the Bucs were an afterthought, little turd squat Tampa Bay, who cares about them? And man, I just want to, just like I said last week, just stick it up everyone's ass when that seems to be the prevailing attitude. And the Bucs really could have done it, so it was frustrating. And like I said, Aikman's talking about the Bucs like they're an afterthought. Joe Buck's kind of just playing it down the middle. But it wasn't about us. It was about the Cowboys, because it's always about the Cowboys. And how nice would it have been for the Bucs to go in there when nobody gave them a chance? And I still don't think Dallas is that good, and I don't think the Bucs are that bad. But the Bucs could have and should have gone in there and won that damn game. And let me tell you, I mean, watching it, Dallas gets two touchdowns gifted to them, one on the fumble return by Jalen Smith off the hit by Randy Gregory, which separated Jameis Winston from the ball, and then Smith returns it all the way. What was it, 69 yards, something like that. Then we fumble a handoff, and they get the ball inside the five. So that's two of their touchdowns in a game they win 27-20. So first things first, hats off to the defense. Because the defense, once again, and they've been playing a lot more consistently since Mark Duffner took over, whether or not that's the reason, but they had the Bucs smack dab in the middle of that game the whole way through. And even with the two terrible touchdowns given up off of turnovers, 14 points off turnovers, even with those, the Bucs had a chance to win. I know they were down by two scores and got the late garbage time touchdown from Mike Evans, but still. So, you know, you look at that game, and Jameis Winston, I'll say this. You know, you have to do better just putting points on the... Forget the turnovers for a second, because I didn't think the turnovers were... I'll talk about the turnovers in a minute. But you got to produce points. I mean, the Bucs had chances to produce points. As usual, they moved the ball a little bit, but they failed to actually score when it counted, and only the two turnovers only accounted for some of that. And Jameis Winston didn't play a bad game. People say, oh, well, it comes back to ball security again and again and again. You know, it's not like Jameis was wrapped up by the ankles and was trying to get one last yard and holding the ball out like a loaf of bread. On the fumble return for a touchdown, he was absolutely clobbered, okay? And if he had a fault on that play, and Troy Aikman was right to point this out, you know, he had a big rush almost immediately, because as usual, it was just a total jailbreak by the Bucs offensive line. So that happened. He stepped up through it, found a little space in the pocket, then broke the pocket and got into some empty space. So, okay. And he's really good at that. Like, that's one of his strengths. That's one of the reasons I like him as a quarterback, because he keeps plays alive and makes plays where other quarterbacks, less mobile quarterbacks, not that Jameis is a great scrambler, but he's a very mobile quarterback in creating more time for himself. So if he does that and then just runs ahead for a few yards, great. But what he did was, once he eluded the initial rush, he kind of looked like he was pretending that rush had just went away, like they weren't still there. And even if you step through them, even if you sidestep and they run by you, they're going to come back. They're not going to stop coming. And obviously, Randy Gregory from behind just drilled him. And so, yeah, Winston has to be a little more cognizant of that. And it's easy for people like me to sit behind a microphone in my family room in my house and say that. I mean, when you've got these guys bearing down on you and you're trying to keep your eyes downfield and make a play, we all have to respect how hard that is. But that's part of the job. And that's a quarterback's job. That's an NFL quarterback's job. And Winston there, I thought Troy Aikman was right, was a little bit too casual. Maybe casual is not the right word, but he didn't treat the rush after he eluded it the first time as if it could still be there. So fine, that's on him. Although, again, it'd be nice if he wasn't under complete and utter duress from the moment the pigskin actually touches the finger pads on his hand. I mean, that's literally what's happening. I mean, he gets the ball and he's already running. So, fine. The second fumble, I keep hearing, oh, well, then he fumbled a handoff exchange. And maybe I need to go watch it again on my DVR. But just because a handoff is fumbled doesn't mean the quarterback fumbled it. And I didn't see anything wrong with that handoff. I mean, it looked like a clean, just a fumble by Bobo Wilson. And whatever, well, I don't want to split hairs about it, it doesn't matter. But my point is, I didn't think he had an issue with ball security, quote-unquote. It seemed more of an issue on the first play of, again, just not being cognizant of the reverse rush coming back after him after he had stepped up through it. So, with all those things said, the Bucks left a lot on the field that they could have done better with, and they lost the game 27-20. There was one other thing I wanted to mention from the game, just real quick. And I tweeted about it when the game was going on the other day. But Adam Humphries, that catch he made on one of the most just powerful, vicious hits. And there was a flag on the play, although the replays did show that it actually was didn't involve the use of the head and neck of the defender, nor was it on Humphries' head and neck. But either way, just the sheer violence of that hit. And for Adam Humphries to catch that ball, take that hit, and not drop the ball, you know, very rarely am I in awe of what these guys do. I know they're pro athletes. I know they're in the top 1% of the top 1% of all physically skilled people in the world. But even then, you get used to that. Like, guys make plays every week. You expect to see guys make plays. But every once in a while, a guy makes a play where I actually drop my jaw, and I'm like, wow, like, these guys are amazing. Like, that Adam Humphries catch, to not let that ball go. I mean, how does that ball not come out after a hit like that? That was amazing. Like, I was just, I mean, much respect. Like, I actually did the We're Not Worthy thing, like Wayne's World, in my living room when Adam Humphries did not drop that ball. Because I saw him catch it. You could even see before he caught it, like, the hit was lining up. And I was thinking, oh, this will be incomplete probably. He's going to get separated from this ball. And then, boom! And he hits the ground, like, I think his back was the first thing to touch the ground, even before his feet did. And the ball's still in there, and I'm like, are you kidding? Like, is that, like, how's that possible? So, I'm a big Adam Humphries fan. There's, you know, no need to say that. I know there's going to be some issues re-signing people and things like that, and he's a free agent. We'll see how many people try to go over the top and get him, but he's one worth keeping if I'm the Bucks, especially. You won't have to worry about DeSean Jackson's money next season and all that. I hope the Bucks, whoever the hell it is, whether it's Jason Light or a new, I don't know who it's going to be. We don't know anything about what the Bucks are going to look like in 2 months or whatever it is. But whoever that is, he's one worth hanging on to. And quietly, he is second on the team in receptions. He's tied for second in touchdowns. After this game against Atlanta, he may very well end up second on the team in yards. Behind Mike Evans. I mean, he's not just some bit player, some role player, and just some guy, you know, like, you know, token, you know, reserve kind of gritty guy. Don't use any of those cliche. I mean, he's a ball player. He's a flat-out ball player. So I just wanted, I felt like I was obligated to say something on this podcast today about Adam Humphries because, I mean, he deserves at least that much for making a play like that. Was an incredible catch. I mean, you see diving catches or guys with one hand or dragging their feet, and those are acrobatic. It's kind of like baseball. You see guys make diving catches or things like that, and those are cool and everything, but they don't impress me as much because they don't require bravery. They require incredible skill. But when a guy does what Humphries did, or in baseball, when a guy does something into the wall, like you'll see Kiermaier make these amazing catches where he robs a home run, but he's camped out and, you know, he times it perfectly. And that's great. I mean, those are amazing. But when he's got his hips turned, he's running full speed toward the wall and he makes a catch, that's when I go, wow, hats off, dude. And same thing with receivers. Like, a guy can make a diving catch or a one-hand catch or a toe drag or something, and I think it's cool, but it's the ones where the guy's going over the middle and just gets absolutely drilled and then pops up with the ball. And Humphries was hurt. I mean, he didn't pop up. He was there visibly shaken by the hit. But still, it wasn't enough to dislodge that ball. I mean, I can't respect that anymore, and that was incredible. So hats off to him. So the Bucks lost the game, and here we are now with one to go. Bucks are 5-10. They can finish either 6-10 or 5-11. Thomas Bassinger wrote a nice piece in the paper on Wednesday. The headline on the sports section of the Tampa Bay Times was, "Bucks fans, would you rather win today or win tomorrow?" It says, here we are again. The Bucks have more to gain by losing to the Falcons than by winning. He lays out a very compelling case. Mathematical. And there's no refuting it. I mean, it's all numbers. It basically boils down to, again, if the Bucks win, Would you rather have that for whatever satisfaction you get from that as a fan, or would you rather have a higher pick in the draft coming up in April? Now, the Bucks can go anywhere. They're sixth right now, and they could stay sixth, win or lose, depending on other games. But they could go as high as fourth if they lose and a couple of other upsets happen. They can drop down to as far as, I believe, 10th if they win and a few other things go poorly. More likely is somewhere in the middle in that 6-8 range, but it depends on other games. And, you know, my thinking has evolved on this a little bit, because I used to say on this very podcast, since we've done a Week 17 show, you know, however many years in a row now where the Week 17 game didn't matter, I used to say on this show, you know what, I know all about the draft picks, but my philosophy is you go out and try and win. You don't worry about that stuff. Winning organizations and winning cultures, they don't worry about picking sixth versus eighth. They just go out and take care of business. And, you know, winners win, or they try, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm not saying all of that was wrong and that I was too idealistic to the point where it's nonsense. I get what I used to be saying. I just don't agree with what I used to be saying anymore. And it's not that I'm going to root for the Bucks to lose, because I can't do that, but the idea that the Bucks should treat this game like a preseason game, the idea that Ryan Griffin should play, and I think he should, the idea that, you know, a lot of other people maybe a little further down the roster should play, I wholeheartedly endorse that. And you know, you go back to last year, and I've said on this show as well many times, hey, you know what, is it really that different picking sixth, picking ninth, somewhere in there? And, you know, it may not be. I mean, there's years where you get a better guy at 6th than 9, or you might have been better off at 9, and you just didn't realize it at the time. I mean, it's kind of a crapshoot. I compared it to blackjack when you're sitting at a crowded blackjack table, and the guy next to you hits when he's not supposed to hit, or he stands when he's not supposed to stand, and then that card that should have been going to him goes to you instead, and it's a bus card, and then you get mad at the guy. Oh, man, he took... That's his bus card. He gave me his bus card because he didn't play basic strategy the right way, blah, blah, blah. You know, when a player makes a mistake that's not you, it's somewhere else on the table, he's just as likely to have gotten you a better card as he is to have gotten you a worse card. And I think about the draft that way, too. I mean, maybe the Bucks win, they drop 3 spots, and they get a future Hall of Famer that they wouldn't have taken if they were picking 3 spots ahead. Or yes, maybe they don't get the guy they wanted because they're too far down the list. Maybe that happens too. I don't know. You know, Thomas Bassinger pointed out, I think, of last year. And the Bucks got Vita Vea, but let's say they don't get that last-minute win against the Saints. Remember that Saints game last year? They played the Saints at home in the final game. Saints were on their way to the playoffs. And the same thing happened. My Buccaneer pride kicked in, and I wanted to say, hey, screw the Saints. I don't want to hear about them. The Bucs can take them. And sure enough, Jameis Winston led a comeback drive under a minute left. It was under 30 seconds or something like that left. And wasn't it fourth down, maybe? And he hit a long pass down the right sideline, and we scored with like 5 seconds, whatever it was. I don't remember exactly. But I remember jumping out of my chair. Yeah, way to end the season, Bucs. All right. You know, that's going to be, hey, that'll carry us into the offseason. Little momentum, little tone setter. Set the mood. This organization's not taking a backseat to anyone anymore. You know what? All garbage. All meant nothing. And the Bucks dropped a few spots, and you know, maybe they get Quentin Nelson, who's just ripping people apart for the Colts on their offensive line right now. Not that I don't like Vita Vea, because I do, and he's played really well lately. But my point is, you know, yeah, maybe it would have helped him to be picking higher. But in other years, maybe picking lower would have been a godsend. I have no idea. So the only thing I'll say, you know, when I start to actually watch the actual football game on Sunday, I'm not going to be thinking about the upcoming draft. But as far as how you approach a game, and this again goes to the top of the organization, players don't tank. Players don't try less hard, or at least not for draft reasons. Guys on the Bucks roster now don't care where the organization is drafting in April, whether it's 6th or 9th. That means nothing to somebody playing, you know, linebacker for the Bucks right now or playing right guard for the Bucks right now. They're going to try and do their best. They're going to try and put things on film. The eye in the sky doesn't lie, and all games are filmed and all practices are filmed. They're always going to try. And the coaching staff, for their part, again, probably doesn't believe they're really going to be around here for that draft anyway, but they're not going to go out there and try to... I mean, the way you tank isn't by not trying as hard as a player, as a coach. The way you tank is how the Bucks did it 4 years ago when they were playing the Saints, and this was the difference between picking first or second and turned out to be the difference between Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. The way you tank is by putting in lesser players and saying, hey, these are the guys who are playing in this game. And that comes from the top. So again, if the Bucs want to treat it like a preseason game, I wouldn't have any objection to that. Ryan Griffin, not that this is the Make-A-Wish Foundation, because it's not, but Ryan Griffin's been on this roster now for several years. He's never yet to this point actually played in the NFL. He's played in preseason games, and he's dressed for regular season games, but he's never played in a regular season game. He's never seen the field, not even for a kneel down, nothing. He would see action on Sunday if it was up to me. Same thing with guys. I mean, again, the Bucs don't have a ton of depth right now on defense anyway with the injuries they've sustained. But, you know, again, Dirk Cutter's not going to do that. The players themselves aren't going to do that. The Glazers have to be the ones. Or if you had a team president, then that would be the person. Maybe it's Jason Light if he knows he's going to be back. I have no idea. That's who says, hey, this is how we're going to handle this on Sunday. And if you still win, hey, more power to you. But we're not going to go out there and do anything that we'll regret. Because I'll tell you, as fun as that game was against the Saints last year, and they came back and won and all that, it was fun for about 15 minutes after the game ended, and then I forgot about it. But the Bucs dropped something like three spots in the draft because of that. So I always say, you know, we only get 16 of these precious days a year, 16 of these games a year out of 365 days, and it sucks to waste three or four of them hoping your team loses anyway to get a better draft pick. But what are we really trying to do here? I mean, what do we envision as the future for the Bucs? Because I'll tell you what, I mean, obviously we all want to be a playoff team. That's the whole point of all this. Watching that Dallas game on Saturday, or on Sunday, I should say, and watching their game against the Saints a couple weeks ago, who they did beat once, but then almost damn near beat again, and the Saints were playing for something when that game happened. This Bucs team is not as terrible as they have seemed at certain times this year. The defense has improved by leaps and bounds over the past couple of months, and unfortunately, in that time, the offense has kind of also regressed to the mean, although that's negative regression in their case. And I'll say this much, too. Yeah, I mean, DeSean Jackson, real quick. He's getting ripped today by everybody on Twitter. Oh, it's Meshon. You know, this was a mistake from the start. And it was. Bad attitude. Bucks don't need guys like that. Good riddance. The whole nine yards. You go on Twitter, you'll see it, too. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. I mean, it is time to move on. But I don't blame the Bucs for trying, okay? It didn't work out, and they probably should have known it wouldn't work out, given Jackson's history, given his personality. But he did make a difference. I mean, the offense the past few weeks, the offense in the second half of the season, when he's been in and out and mostly out, has been a lot less effective than it was in the first half of the year. Under both Fitzpatrick and Winston, when they were throwing the ball all over the place, I mean, Jackson's presence as a deep threat does make a difference. And again, even though he and Jameis weren't on the same page, and even though it wasn't always perfect, I mean, you can't deny that he had an impact on the offense. And that's not a good enough reason, given all the other things going on, to bring him back. But, I mean, the Bucs tried something. It didn't work out. It was a tough free agent signing. There was money that maybe could have been used on offensive line or cornerback or something else. Again, hindsight's 20/20, and maybe even foresight should have been 20/20 in this case. But I'll tell you what, I mean, he made a difference, and the Bucs tried. I mean, I don't blame them for trying. So you look at this team as a whole, and they had a couple embarrassing losses, a couple of losses, I mean, the Bears game, things like that, but this team played with the best in the league all year. They did it against New Orleans twice, won one of them. They did it against Dallas. They didn't have to play the Rams or the Chiefs. I don't think those would have gone real well if they had. And the Bears did thump them. I get that. I'm not trying to be like, hey, we're not that far off guy. Bucks have a lot of work to do. But that just kind of tells you everything you need to know about the NFL. I mean, the line is fine. And it's why when people say, oh, the Bucks are, you know, so far from where they need to be, I don't think any team is that far from where they need to be. I really don't. I mean, you saw the Bucks and Bears last year when they played each other. It was opening day, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And the Bucks just thumped them. Both teams were ended up, you know, double-digit losses, not being very good. But look at what the Bears did in 1 year. And you say, oh, well, that's different. The Bears stock was on the rise. The Bucks stock is dropping. Again, I don't think it's that simple. I don't think any team is that far away. There's just not enough of a difference. And the Bucks have pieces in place. And I don't know how the draft's going to go or free agency, but I know they have a lot of money to spend. They've got room to do that. Who ends up doing the spending and who makes the decisions on that remains to be seen. But, you know, that's the beauty of the NFL. Is for as bad as this has all been this year, and it was bad as it was last year, and in fact, really nothing has changed at all in the past 10 years. Every single year, the next season, the next offseason, I'm sitting right there thinking, you know what? Bucks could get themselves in this thing. And it's because they really could. Now, so could 31 other teams. I mean, the Browns, same thing with the Browns. I mean, they're going to miss the playoffs, but they're going to have a chance if they win on Sunday to go 8-7-1. That's a winning record. And that's a tie game short of a 9-7 record, which might have had them in the playoff conversation. I mean, these things, and that's a team that didn't win anything. All right? These things happen. And they get turned around from quickly. Both ways. I mean, you can go down the drain, too, even if you think you're riding high. Look at the Packers, who we all assume were going to make another run at it, you know. Aaron Rodgers, this is he'll take one more shot at this. And they're right there with the Bucs now. So you don't know. What we do know, well, maybe we know this, but what we know from reports, and this was on the website at joebucksfan.com, Jason LaCanfora tweeting earlier saying, okay, you know, we got a report before this earlier in the week that, oh, maybe this decision's not made. Maybe the Bucs are still right in there. You know, with Dirk Cutter, or maybe he's back. It's not for certain yet, which I thought was strange. I feel like the decision's already been made. I'm saying this based on my gut, not based on anything inside that somebody told me. But LaCanfora reported, quote, the Cardinals, Broncos, Jets, and Bucks have known internally for a while now that change is inevitable for 2019. That report makes sense. There was another report, and this was actually an article written in the Monday Morning Quarterback, which is, if you're a football fan, a good resource to follow, but it was about the NFL coaching hot seat, and they rated guys as, you know, the seat warm, getting hotter, or heating up, or whatever you want to call it. Then there was On Fire, Dirk Cutter. But here's what the article said about Dirk Cutter, and this was written by, let me see who this was, this was Jonathan Jones of MMQB. He says, quote, the pros for Dirk Cutter, the Bucs have gained more yards this season than they ever have before. That's not a big deal to me. But anyway, continuing quote, the team started the year with wins against one of this season's Super Bowl favorites and the defending world champions. And since firing their defensive coordinator, the Tampa Bay defense has finally stepped up and played well down the stretch. All true. There are a lot more cons, it continues. In Cutter's 12 years as an offensive coordinator or head coach, he's had two top 10 scoring offenses in 2007 with Jacksonville and in 2012 with Atlanta. So for all those yards, these Bucks still aren't scoring like they could be. Amen to that. Tampa Bay has missed the playoffs 11 straight seasons now, and in 7 of those seasons they've racked up double-digit losses. Since firing John Gruden, the Bucks have had 4 coaches. Not one lasted more than 3 seasons. And Cutter is a game away from finishing his third year with a 19-28 record. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network reported, this Sunday, Cutter getting fired isn't a guarantee because you can't be assured you'll find a better option. And that's the end quote. I'll just go one more piece at the end here.